The MMA Roadshow episode number 3. My name is John Morgan, and I am here in sunny Las Vegas. That is right. I stayed home this week. My man Cole Coffey is on the road. He is up in New Jersey and New York getting things done at UFC on Fox 15. He's actually going to be cutting everything together for me as well. So tonight I will send him all the audio here. He will cut everything up, and he will have this bad boy ready for everyone. Because that's what he does. That's my man, Cole Coffey. Listen, let me set the scene right here. I am at Buffalo Wild Wings. Now, if you're in from Las Vegas, if you know me, you know this is my spot. I figured, hey, as long as I'm going to be here doing this by myself, nobody around me, I might as well go to where I enjoy spending my free time. This is my Cheers. This is where everybody knows my name. They take good care of me here. Warm Springs in Durango is the area, in case you're ever in the area and just want to stop by and have a probably about a 50-50 shot of me being here. And, hey, man, if you come do it, I'll sit down and have a cold beverage with you. Got no problem with that. And that's what I'm doing today, having a nice frosty beverage, actually sitting outside on the patio. It's April, which means 70-degree weather here in Las Vegas. Absolutely beautiful. Really cannot hate it at all. So we did something a little different. You say, John, how are you going to do the MMA Roadshow if you're not even on the road? Well, of course, Cold Coffee's on the road, so that kind of counts, right? But on top of that, I went out on the road a little bit too today. I talked to a couple guys, got out of my house, and put together a couple interviews that I hope you like. First of all, World Series of Fighting President Ray Sefo was able to go to his office and at the WSOF headquarters here in Las Vegas and sat down with him and really just picked his brain about a number of things. It sounds like he may actually fight again this year and that this will be the end of his legendary career in the cage as he really focuses on his business. And he also broke some news with this as well, talked about some of the upcoming things that are going on with World Series of Fighting. So definitely want to check that out and hear the latest from Ray Sefo and really just kind of hear a little bit about Ray the man. You know, really an interesting guy. It certainly has lived through not only this sport, but combat sports in general. And really just a level-headed human being, man. It's hard not to be around Ray Sefo. To be around Ray Sefo and not like him because he really just is a nice guy. Wow, I almost had a little accident on here. That was interesting. Also had a chance to go to the Mayweather Boxing Club to speak to a friend of mine and a friend of MMA Junkies, Dominic Robinson, now the Fallen Angel. Certainly you should be familiar with him by now if you're just starting to listen to this show and haven't listened to MMA Junkie Radio in the past. He'll be a new name for you. But he's a guy that I've known for several years and been grinding on the regional scene, man, trying to make his way to the UFCs. He's hijacked a couple of UFC press conferences along the way and is a Twitter machine and just a social media stalker. And he's a lot of fun. So just talk to him about the grind, what it takes to be on that level and trying to make it to the UFC. He recently relocated from California to Las Vegas, so just kind of got his thoughts on the whole Las Vegas training scene and what it's been like for him out here. So hopefully you'll enjoy that as well. And the cool thing about it was, listen, he's training at the Mayweather Boxing Club. And of course, that is the home gym of Floyd Mayweather. And of course, we're just a few weeks away from Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao. Maybe a couple years too late, but still a huge, huge fight in the history of combat sports in general. So they had a huge press day there earlier this week. So just to be inside the gym and on the eve of such a historic fight between those two people, I thought was a lot of fun. So hopefully you enjoy that one as well. So listen, before we get started, check us out on iTunes now. If you're not subscribing on iTunes, do that. You can just search the MMA Roadshow. The MMA Roadshow with John Morgan on iTunes and subscribe, man. Get signed up. Give us some reviews. Give me some feedback, man. Hit me up. I want to make this thing as fun as possible and as enjoyable as possible, so let me know. Of course, you can also get it on the MMAroadshow.com. And we are on Instagram now, the MMA Roadshow. So follow us there. Cold Coffee's up in New York and New Jersey taking pictures. And I was going to say tweet a picture, but that doesn't make sense on Instagram. So what do? You gram there, I guess? You IG it? I don't know. Anyway, he's posting photos from what he's doing, and you know I'm keeping photos of what I'm doing here too, so you can kind of see what's going on in the world of MMA as far as what we're seeing. So, listen, the reason I'm not at UFC on Fox 15, you say, wonder, well, John, man, I see you at all these events. The bottom line is, A, I can't go to every UFC event. I think I totaled it up last year, and it was 36 of the 46 UFC events that they held last year I was at. But Up in the Northeast especially, I don't always make it up there. We've got Matt Erickson, who lives just outside of Chicago, and it's pretty easy, you know, short flight, keeps cost downs, and so he's the one handling that for us. And listen, I'm not going to lie, I've got a real busy stretch in May. I'm definitely not complaining. I'm excited. I'm going to be in Australia, the Philippines, and Brazil in May, and so it's just going to be a busy run, and a chance to spend a few weeks at home. For those of you who don't know, I have a wife and I have a son that will turn 3 next month as well. So the chance to spend a couple of weeks at home with them is important. So I skipped out on this week. I won't be in Montreal either, but we will have you well represented both on the MMA Roadshow and MMA Junkie up in Montreal as well. So that's why I stayed home. Now let me say this: UFC on Fox 15. We're not using this thing as a breakdown show, but I really love this fight card. If you're listening to the show, I'm assuming that you know a thing or two about mixed martial arts, so I don't have to tell you how great this card is. But listen, I really, really love the main event here between Lyoto Machida and Luke Rockhold. I mean, this is two of the absolute best fighters in the 185-pound division, which is really becoming one of the more interesting divisions in all of MMA right now. It's just dominated by Anderson Silva for so long, and I think people considered it kind of one of the weakest divisions in the sport. And now, you know, really becoming one of the most interesting divisions there is. So this is a huge fight for both of these men. Certainly both want a shot at the title. You've got to think that if Luke Rockhold wins, that he gets that shot. Certainly you've got Jacare Souza, who would love to have that fight as well. But I think the fact that he lost an opportunity to fight Yoel Romero and is now fighting Chris Camozzi will probably cost him a title opportunity. So, you know, I think there's definitely a title shot on the line for at least Luke Rockhold here. But more than anything, I think this is just two highly skilled fighters and two of the classiest guys in the sport. So very cool, and I'm looking very, very forward to this fight. I'm also, and I know, look, it lost a little bit of a luster. Jacare was supposed to fight Yoel Romero. Yoel Romero got hurt out of the fight. Chris Camozzi steps in, and I think a lot of people were kind of disappointed. And I can understand that. It was going to be a huge fight at 185. Yoel Romero has really been impressive, just a beast of a man. But, I, you know, I like Chris Camozzi stepping in here. And it's funny because, you know, I was at the show in Krakow, Poland this past weekend. And when all the news was going down about, you know, Jacare needing an opponent, Yoel Romero having to step out. And, you know, I asked Joe Silva before the fight started, you know, UFC matchmaker, have you guys found a replacement yet? You're going to have time. And he said, listen, man, we're looking. You know, I know that Chris Camozzi is campaigning for it on Twitter. I haven't even had a chance to speak to him yet. So that's a possibility, but we're trying to find somebody. You know, Jacare really wants to fight. It's been a long time since he's fought. He's been in training camp. He wants to stay busy. He wants the paycheck that comes with that as well. So we're trying to get him a fight, but man, just not a lot of people lining up to fight Jacare, period, much less Jacare on 1 week. He is a tough, tough fighter. So for Chris Camozzi to step in here and say, listen, I want this opportunity, man. I want to set right what went wrong. You got to respect the guy for it. I was there in Jaraguá do Sul, Brazil, in May 2013 when these two guys fought the first time. And Chris was in such a good place ahead of that fight, man. Really just thought this was going to be his moment to break out. He was on a four-fight winning streak coming into that fight. And this was his chance to really break out in the big time, and he lost in the first round. Extremely disappointed, man. He was heartbroken. You could just read it on his face. There was no hiding it. You know, no fighter likes to lose, of course, but you could really just see the disappointment in his eyes. And I will say, one of the most beautiful scenes I've ever seen covering the sport. I'm not sure it made TV. The entire arena, I believe it went to commercial break. The entire arena started doing the alligator clap along with Jacare celebrating the victory as they were waiting to come back and get the official result. And I thought that was a really cool scene. But props to Chris Camozzi for stepping in here, because again, not a lot of people wanting to face Jacare Souza, and Chris Camozzi knows exactly how dangerous that is. So kudos to him. And I favor Jacare in the fight, certainly. I love a good story, but I think Jacare is the better fighter. But I love Chris Camozzi's heart and determination for stepping in here. The other fight I really love, Max Holloway versus Cub Swanson. I think with the attention that's been given to the main event, this was kind of slipping under the radar a little bit. But two just very, very exciting fighters at featherweight, and really looking forward to that one. So a big card, UFC on Fox 15. And, again, Matt Erickson and Cole Coffey are out there getting it done for MMA Junkie. The rest of us will be chipping in from back home. So Listen, did a little bit of MMA Junkie Radio this morning. Just want to touch on something real quick, and talking about Chris Camozzi made me think about it. But there was a great question that a caller had, and I apologize, I don't remember his name right now. But you know, he had a question about whether, as journalists, you know, we have emotions ahead of fights. You know, if you feel kind of emotionally tied to guys, and man, I have to say, you know, I answered a little bit there, but I just want to follow up here. I think it's hard not to. Certainly, you can't cheer for guys, and I don't think you should ever show up for a fight wanting somebody to win or hoping somebody wins or what have you. But it's hard not to relate to these guys. They're human beings, and I think that's what makes it so special. You see the struggle, the sacrifices, all the things that they put themselves through, their body through, their mind through, their family through, their wives and kids through, everything that it takes to be successful in the sport. And I just think that's what makes this the greatest sport on the face of the planet. The highest of highs when you win, the lowest of lows when you lose, and the real human emotion that's on the table in each and every fight. And there's nowhere to run, there's nowhere to hide, there's no teammates to blame, there's nothing you can do. Yes, it's a team sport in a lot of ways, your coaches, your trainers, your training partners, but once that cage door closes, it's just you and another person determining who's better. And man, I don't know how you don't have emotional ties when you hear these fighters talk about what they go through and what they do to entertain us. And of course, they do it for compensation. You know, it's their job. But I think you got to be a special kind of individual to do what they do. And yeah, man, it's hard not to get emotionally tied to these fighters. And I think it's one of the reasons why I enjoy, you know, watching the first prelim of the night. Yes, you know, your better fighters, your more famous fighters, all those things are in the headliner. But, you know, if you're not paying attention to all the fights in the card, you're missing out on opportunities. And I think there's nothing better than finding a little diamond in the rough and somebody you can relate to on a personal level somehow, just watching their progress through the ranks. So, anyway, just a little peel back the curtains a little bit, let you know how I watch fights. I'm a sucker for a good story, man. You give me a good underdog story or somebody that came from nothing and made themselves somewhere, I'm going to be cheering for that every time. So hopefully you can watch fights the same way. I think that's what makes it so interesting. The technique is great. The sport is great. But I think it's the people that are in the sport that truly make it great. So listen, the other big news, of course, has been Phil Davis jumping from the UFC over to Bellator. And we talked a little bit about it this week on MMA Junkie Radio, of course, but I was able to get a little bit of the details of the contract. It's my understanding that Mr. Wonderful got a $50,000 signing bonus just for signing the deal, and that when he fights first, whenever that may be, he's going to be making $65,000 to show and $65,000 to win. So I was not able to see the contract to verify it myself, but I was able to speak with a couple of people who had access to those pieces of paper, and that's what they led me to believe. So a nice start for him, but it gets better because there are all kinds of bonuses written into this contract, from my understanding, you know, including bonuses when he completes a certain number of fights. And then very interesting that there are bonus levels, from what I understand, tied into the ratings and the live gate as well for the fights that he's on. So kind of really makes Phil Davis a real part of the company. Like, really has a stake in the success of the promotion. I think that's an interesting way for Bellator to go about it. You know, whether or not that's something they're doing with all their fighters, or at least, you know, marquee fighters or marquee free agents, we'll see. You know, maybe this was a one-off deal that Phil Davis and his management team were able to arrange, but I kind of like the idea of it. You get a chance to really get your fighter invested in the promotion, and, you know, letting him be financially successful along with the company. And I kind of like the idea of that. I don't think it's a concept that'll work for every contract or for even every promotion, but for what Bellator MMA is trying to do right now, it's pretty interesting. So and then of course the other big deal is the no sponsor tax, I should say. You know, Phil Davis is going to be able to use whoever he wants. You know, he's going to be able to stick with Affliction. He's going to be able to use any other sponsors that he wants, and that's going to be a real interesting story to follow. Completely understand why the UFC is going with Reebok, completely understand why they're doing what they're doing, and that's a huge deal for them. But, you know, there's some opportunities for Bellator and other promotions out there to snatch up these sponsors that still want to be involved in mixed martial arts. So, anyway, good good on Phil Davis. And if you see him this weekend down in SoCal, tell him to buy you a beer. Know that things are looking good for Mr. Wonderful. Sounds like he signed a nice lucrative contract. And I've always said, and I still do believe this, and maybe it'll change someday, but I do believe if you want to say you're the best fighter on the planet, if you do want to say you're the best fighter in the world, you do have to fight in the UFC because you have to beat the best fighters over and over on a routine basis. That said, man, if your goal is to just provide for your family, to set up your future, to maybe pay for your kids' college, pay off a house, you know, get yourself in a good position, you know, there's other places to do that. And, you know, I think Phil Davis has done exactly that. And you know, the light heavyweight division at Bellator is not a bad one. They've actually got some recognizable names there. So, you know, as far as their divisions go, it's one of their better divisions in terms of star power and name recognition. So, interested to see what Phil Davis does, and just interested to see this year, you know, as Bellator continues to make their changes in terms of their operational style, and of course the UFC makes their changes in terms of sponsors. Hey, who else jumps ship? Well, you know, does this become a real, you know, bidders war for free agents? Certainly worth following. So anyway, listen, the frosty beverages have been poured and are ready to be consumed. So let's do this. Stay tuned next, and we'll bring the first interview with Ray Seffo, a legend of kickboxing, the World Series of Fighting president as well. He invited me to his office this afternoon. We sat down for a little bit, and he broke some news, talked about the direction of the company, talked about his life in general, and talked about the fact that he'll be fighting again in 2015, it seems. So hopefully enjoy the time with Mr. Seffo at the World Series of Fighting office. Well, I am here in the offices of World Series of Fighting president Ray Seffo, and a fantastic office it is. As I'm looking around here, man, you got a lot of sporting memorabilia, stuff from your own career, I guess, and stuff from you're a little bit of a collector as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's a lot of things, you know. For me, I love all sorts of sports, and but obviously, you know, kickboxing, MMA is my passion. So, you know, we have some, and then, you know, I got some Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali gloves up here as well.
That's amazing.
Pictures of the K1 legends, you know, so absolutely.
Yeah. Are Raiders fans? Are they looking at the NFL football over here?
Actually, you know, when I moved over here, my second older brother, he's a huge Raiders fan, and he's been living in Alabama now for the last 5 years. And he'll follow that team to their death, or his death, should I say. I mean, when I first arrived in L.A., I mean, you know, to his home, because he used to live out in Orange County, and I walked into the house, and in his lounge, he had a shrine of me and my younger brother, and then on the other side of the house was a shrine of the Raiders.
That's incredible.
So, yeah, he would kill to have that.
That's awesome. You know what I mean? What's your favorite piece in here? I mean, this Ali Frazier, that one stands out to me pretty awesome. Is that your favorite piece that you have?
Yeah. Outside of my son, yeah, absolutely.
yeah, fair enough.
Know, pictures of my son everywhere in this office. But, that is, you know, a piece that everybody can relate to because everybody knows who they are,
yep.
You know. Everybody, I mean, if you're in the martial arts world, you know who Peter Ertz is, Jerome LeBanner, but the people that don't follow kickboxing or mixed martial arts knows who Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier is. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that has to be the number one piece in here.
That's beautiful, man. Well, let's talk about your career right now, man. 20 events down in the World Series of Fighting, man. I can remember being there at the press conference day one when we announced this thing. And listen, I think you would readily admit you were pretty nervous that day standing up at the dais.
Absolutely. You know, it's I had done interviews and everything else, you know, a million times over, you know, right throughout my career, even back to the days when I was modeling and doing part-time acting. And then suddenly, you know, you're the president of this company that we've started and the face, and I'm like, okay, I better not screw this up. Needless to say, yeah, I think that first, and then, you know what, I get given a script, you know, certain things that our PR team have put together, like an hour beforehand, and I'm like, okay, now I got to try to remember this and this and that. But yeah, no, you know, now 20 events in, man, I couldn't be any happier. You know, obviously there's a lot of headaches along the way, but, you know, the team always pulls through fight week and pull it off. You know what I mean? So, looking forward to the next one.
That's awesome. Talk about your expectations. I mean, when you think back to where you were standing that day and what you thought it was going to be like, and I'm sure you were excited to be the president of this brand new promotion and all these expectations. What's it been like? Did it play out the way you thought it was? Has it been different? What's this path been like for you?
Yes, it's definitely when we started. Obviously, the vision and the goal is to be one of the best in the world, and that is still the vision. That is still the goal. But you know, you don't really know until you're in it. And then you go, okay, this goes wrong, this goes wrong, this is okay, that's all right. So there's a lot of things that it didn't occur to me that would happen. And and again, like I said, you know, it hasn't been easy, but you know, anything great doesn't come easy, right? So, and again, the team here have been solid. You know, everybody sticks together and everybody – got everybody's back and we're working together. And so in terms of operation, everything is great. You know what I mean? So moving forward, obviously there's still a lot to learn, but that's the process of this. If you're not learning, you're not moving forward, right? So
yeah.
We're still learning.
Is there one lesson in particular, one thing, whether it be a you know, just a way to do business, or you know, a particular lesson or practice or motto or whatever? I mean, is there one thing that you can point to say, this is the biggest thing I've learned, this is the thing that really helped me turn a corner?
Well, I've learned a long time ago. I live my business the way I live my life. I'm when it comes to me. What you see is what you get. My word is my bond, and that's how it is, right? So I bring that into a business aspect, and I conduct business the exactly same way. Because if I don't have any hidden agendas or anything like that, so if I'm saying one thing and I'm doing another, you can only go so far in life like that or in business like that, right? So me is like, this is what you see, this is what you get. I give you my word, that's what's going to happen. So what I've learned along the way is that not everybody's like that. And that's the kind of the difficult part, that people have their hidden agendas. People say this and they mean something else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I've learned to kind of, understand that side of it and just try and keep it all in perspective and try and understand. I mean, I've asked the question many a times, why do people say certain things and do something else? You know what I mean?
Right.
It's really simple. Say what you mean and mean what you say. Plain as day.
Seems right? Easy enough, right?
That's how easy it is.
And obviously I don't want you to say any, you know, names in particular or anything like that. Not trying to make it, you know, that kind of an interview.
Right.
But when you say that, is it some – because you've had some frustrated fighters along the way. Is that
right?
What you're talking about, some of these people that you thought you had a good relationship with, or you thought everything was good, and then they go on Twitter and they say this, or they go on Facebook and say that?
Not necessarily fighters, but you know, that has happened. But also with certain people that we deal with, whether it's to do that, you know, from every aspect of the game, and you understand this game, you know, just as well as anybody else. And so, it can go from sponsorship to, merchandise to this to that. It's just amazing how many different things turn up and you go, but why, you know, why wasn't that the way you said it? Because this is what you said, and now you're turning up with something completely different, right?
Yep.
So yeah, it's all over the place. It can be anything.
I get it, man. Well, you know, we're sitting here in your office. You got the big chair, the big computer, the beautiful desk. But I know that, you know, in a couple hours I can go over and I can see you in the gym too. You know,
right.
You'll be in there sweating and grinding, and you'll have a T-shirt on and whatever.
Absolutely.
Why do you do that? Why do you train? Because I got to believe, and I could be wrong. I mean, are there still fighting days ahead of you, or is it just you just do it because you still love it?
There is still fighting days ahead of me. I've actually made a promise to myself that this year will be my last year. I'm not getting any younger, and this is a young man's sport. You know what I mean? What I do love is that it's the training every day has been part of my life. You know, I've been in, I had my first boxing glove since I was 5 years old. So, if I'm not in the gym, if I miss out training, let's say 2 days back to back, I feel so depressed. You know what I mean? Like, I have to be in the gym. Yeah. So, it's a great relief for me to be there. And, you know, as you can see, you know, I'm in here, I'm in a suit. And then when, you know, in a few hours, I'll be in the gym, shorts and T-shirt,
yep,
laced up and ready to spar. You know what I mean? So I love it. but, yeah, I have decided that 2015 is probably the year that I'm going to hang the gloves up for sure.
What's the fight going to be? I mean, well, what do you think? One more fight this year? Or maybe two?
One or two would be great. You know what I mean?
Kickboxing, MMA, wrestling?
Both, yeah. Either kickboxing or MMA.
Okay.
Yeah, one of the two.
You don't really consider pro wrestling a fight. That's more just like entertainment.
Right? Yeah, pro wrestling is just entertainment. You know what I mean? I mean, I love it. It's still dangerous, but yeah, you know, that's something I can do until I'm 100, you know, where
it's a little easier when it's not for real, huh?
Exactly. It's a lot easier when you know you're going to win today. Yeah. I remember when I spoke to Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, about 8 years ago when I first met him. And, you know, I was like, you know, hey, man, great job. I'm a huge fan of yours. And he's like, yeah, I've followed your career as well. And he says, the only difference between my career and yours is that I know when I'm losing or winning.
That's awesome.
So that was, you know, I never really, because I'm a huge pro wrestling fan.
Right.
My parents, I mean, I can remember when watching pro wrestling when I was maybe 6-7 years old. And so, you know, Ricky Steamboat was one of my favorites. Right. Peter Maivia, who's Dwayne's grandfather.
Wow.
You know, so just some of the big names, Steve Aoki, Hulk Hogan, Dusty Rose, you know. You name
all
it.
Of it.
Oh, yeah.
You love it.
Randy Savage. I mean, these were Mr. Perfect.
That's great, man. That is, you're bringing back old memories.
Yeah,
right,
exactly. Rick Rude. You know, so I'm a huge pro wrestling fan. And so I never really thought about it until Dwayne said that. The Rock said that. And I was like, oh, I didn't really think about it like
that.
That's
funny. That's funny. Well, could you, if you do MMA, would it be for World Series or do you have to go do it somewhere else? What do you think?
That's a good question. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
About a month ago, Ali and I talked about it. And we're like, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, we have a lot of guys on the rosters. And so, obviously, they're priority in that sense. And so, we haven't really confirmed anything yet.
Right.
But we'll see. What's
it? It's interesting because, you know, when you did fight, I thought it was kind of cool. You know, I thought it was kind of neat. The president's getting in there and doing it.
Right.
But I did see a lot of people that said, well, but wait a minute. You know, does the guy he's fighting think that maybe they're conspiring against him? You know, how do we know it's fair? Is it the right fight? So I guess you kind of see both sides of it.
No, really, because like I said earlier, that's everything to me is just black and white.
Mm-hmm.
He's in there as a fighter. I'm in there as a fighter. I'm not in there as a president. You know what I mean? When you see me in a suit, I'm the president. When you see me in shorts and gloved up, ready to fight, I'm the fighter.
Yep.
It's really that simple, right? If you see me in front of a camera doing an interview, that's what I'm doing, you know? And it's just, again, like I said, you know, I'm that kind of guy where when I signed on the dotted line to fight, he signed on the dotted line, okay, we're fighting, right? And really, that's how simple it is. You know, people can look at it from all different angles, and I don't blame them, but at the same time, it's like, okay, it's really simple, you know?
It's just a fight.
It's just a fight to me. Yeah. And then when I jump back in the cage in the suit, and I'm the president, that's really that simple.
Nice. Right? Why is 2015 the year? Is it your body telling you? Is it your age? Is it the business, what you have here? Why is this the year?
It's more the business.
Yeah.
Because I'm so busy. For example, you know, we just got back from Foxwood, Connecticut, and, you know, we had an amazing show there. The people out there are great. Felix and his team out there are fantastic. And then next week I'm headed to Switzerland. and I'm there for a week. I come back for 12 hours, and then I'm headed to Australia for a week.
Wow.
You know, so I have Brad Tavares as the co-main for UFC out there. And then in Switzerland, it's for a cancer charity event.
Wow.
That I was booked for 5 months ago. So, you know, I can't let these people down. So, yeah. So, I come back 12 hours and I'm back on the plane again.
That's insane. You mentioned the UFC. I mean, the fact that you still train, obviously, Brad Tavares
right.
is one of the fighters that you corner in here. What's it like for you when you're there? I mean, you're the president of the World Series of Fighting, but then, you know, it's amazing. I see you. You're there holding a bucket for a guy or
right.
holding his clothes while he's weighing in. I guess, you know, what's it like for you to I guess, kind of take a step down and not be an executive anymore? You're a cornerman.
Absolutely. But, you know, again, it comes back to what I like said earlier. When I fit in all sorts of different roles, and I thank the good Lord every day that I'm able to do the things that I do, because not only that I love it, I'm very passionate about it. You know, when I'm at the World Series, I'm the president of World Series. When I'm coaching my guys, I'm the coach. You know what I mean? And when I'm the coach, I'll hold a towel. I'll, you know, carry a bucket. I don't care what I got to do, because I'm not there for me. I'm there for my guy.
Right.
You know what I mean? And the guys that I coach is they're family to me. So I, you know, it's funny. We were away with, I think it was Evan Dunham. He fought one time. And a couple of the other coaches that was with us, they all went out the night before the fight. And Evan's like, hey, coach, why don't you go out? Are you going out with the guys? I said, no. I don't go out because I want to wake up tomorrow and be as sharp mentally as you are.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because for me, it's very important that I'm there physically, mentally, spiritually for my guy. So
yeah.
I'm not there for me. I don't go out. I'm not that kind of guy. So I focus on my guy. And when he wins, then we can go and have a couple of orange juice, and we're good. You know what I mean?
It's funny. You know, I wonder what your theory is on this, because you mentioned that. I see, you know, I'm out on the road, and I'll see, you know, teams together or whatever. And obviously, you got a fighter cutting weight, and then the rest of his corner is having, like, a ribeye and, a chicken fried steak or whatever. So what's your take on that? I mean, do you go that far, like, fight week? Like, hey, look, I'm not going to, like, indulge in front of you. I'm going to try to go through this battle with you, or is that different?
Occasionally, I'll be like, I'll still eat certain things, and but I'll still be kind of aware. But it's just like when I used to fight a cruiserweight when I had to cut weight, coming up in the rankings and what have you. I didn't mind having my teammates eat in front of me, because it gave me strength, to be quite honest. The more they ate, the stronger I got.
Wow.
Because I knew that the sacrifice – it's all going to pay off fight night, which is the very next day.
I like that.
You know what I mean?
I like that.
So that's how I have always looked at it. And so, you know, I think it's one of those things that fighters got to understand that, sure, it don't matter. I mean, but that's my philosophy on it. You know what
cool.
I mean? That was my take on it.
How about just being at a UFC event? Is that weird for you? I mean, you're in competition. I mean, I think you'll be the first one to admit they're the premier brand right now.
Absolutely.
But you guys are doing a great job of coming up in the marketplace. But does it feel weird? Does anybody here in the office go, Ray, man, come on, what are you doing? You're at a UFC event. Do you ever feel like you're being a traitor or selling out your company by being there at a UFC?
No, I don't feel like I'm a traitor, because, you know, I can go. First of all, I'm my own person. I'll go to a UFC show when I want, and nobody's going to tell me otherwise. I'm going to go to a Bellator show if I want. I'm going to go to a Manny Pacquiao and Mayweather fight if I want. I'm going to go whatever show I want to go to. I'm going to go to the Lions fights if I want. Nobody's going to freaking tell me what to do in that sense. I'm my own person, my own time. And saying that, you know, if we had a show and I turn up at someone else's show and not get the
now we got a problem. That's great.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're still the World Series of Fighting president wherever
exactly.
you go.
It doesn't matter where I go. I'm still representing. Listen, if I go out there and I act a fool and, like, you know, make an idiot of myself, then I get, you know, if there's some kind of ramifications from that.
Right.
But I that's not me. You know what I mean? And I'm always, everything that I do, I represent World Series of Fighting.
Yep.
And whether I'm coaching, whether I'm going to watch a show, whether I'm going to the movies or whatever, I'm just who I am. You know what I mean?
Fair enough. Let's talk about some of the things maybe going on in your organization. Gaethje versus Palomino. You know, I don't know. That I remember watching it. You know, I didn't get to go. I was watching on TV, though. And that night, the thing that I tweeted out and the thing I think I still feel is that was the Griffin Bonner of World Series of Fighting.
Oh.
Is that the feel around the office?
100%. 100%. I mean, that.
First of all, we should just say Aliyah Delaziz and his daughter just walked by. Yeah. That's what, a little distraction there. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, is that the feel?
He's looking at
look at this crazy guy. We'll have to talk about this nutcase in a little bit.
I know, right? absolutely, that was the Bonner for Griffin fight, you know? Justin Gaethje and Palomino. Ali and I knew that fight was going to be like that. But you never know until you're in there, right? And that fight, not only it lived up to the hype, those guys really stamped their mark of who they are as fighters. And it showed the world, you know, what kind of fighters they are and who they are as people, really. Because those two bonded in that cage. And I used this same thing where Mark Hunt and I we knew each other, but right. We didn't really know each other until we, you know, stood toe to toe. And after that fight, Mark and I became friends, you know, closer friends than we were before. It was just, hey, how you doing? Now, you know, like when he fought out here one time, I was over there with the team and supported him throughout. And I still support him through his career right now,
yep.
You know what I mean? Because Mark is a warrior. And so coming back to Palomino and Gaethje, that fight, you know, really showed the world who those guys are.
Yeah.
And, the thing is, every single time those two meet, it'll be exactly the same.
That's what I got to ask. You know, Griffin and Bonner, I remember after Griffin and Bonner, I remember thinking, they got to do this again, man. They got to do this fight again. This was a classic. They got to do it again.
Right.
And the UFC tapped the brakes on it, and they said, no. They waited a little while, and then when the fight finally happened again, it kind of just – it wasn't the same. It was a
right.
disappointment. So what do you think? I'm not asking you to tell me right now if it's booked or whatever, but do you – in your mind, do you see these guys fighting again and maybe doing it soon?
Right here, right now, absolutely it's going to happen soon.
It's going to happen soon? I love it. I love it.
funny enough, Ali and I just talked about it yesterday, and it's in the works already.
Nice. So You think it might be the next fight for both of them perhaps?
Very, very likely, yeah.
I like it. We're breaking news. That's
very likely.
That's what's up.
Yeah.
Talk about Aliyah Abdelaziz. I want to know, you know, kind of get your opinion on him, and I'll just throw mine out there. When I first met the guy, I thought he was a nutcase, and I was like, this
is it pain in the backside?
It was a pain in the backside. But I'll tell you what, you know, obviously with him being here in Vegas and you guys being here, and I've gotten a chance to speak with him a lot, passionate, committed, and knows the sport, man. It seems like, you know, when it comes to matchmaking and comes to his job, and I know his job entails more than just matchmaking, but an aspect, this guy really, he's a student of the game.
Absolutely. He's everything you've just said. He's a great guy. He's a good family guy. Loves his family, but very passionate about what he does. And Ali's the type of guy, you know, he doesn't just go, okay, that guy and that guy. He watches countless, you know, videos and footage on fighters and then matches guys together. And, yeah, no, it's good when you have a guy like that, like Ali, who's very passionate. And he just committed to what he does, you know what I mean? And he'll tell it like it is, too. And I guess that's why he and I connect so well, you know, nothing but love for Ali, because you know exactly where you stand with Ali, you know what I mean? If he doesn't like you, he'll tell you. You know what I mean? If he likes you, he's going to be your best friend. So he's that kind of guy.
It feels like you guys have become friends.
Right. You know, well, you know, funny enough, Ali and I met probably a year before we started World Series of Fighting. And then a few months after we started, you know, I brought him on board, and he's part of the team. You know what I mean? Like, he's one of our partners. But he's a great matchmaker. He knows the sport. He's very passionate and a good family man. Absolutely.
Yep, for sure. Melvin Guillard, talk to us about that. I mean, obviously not a great situation. We know everything that went down. You don't have to go through it all.
Right.
Have you guys made a decision? Is he going to fight for World Series again? What do you think?
That's a good question. You know, we've been, you know, we just got back from Foxwood, and we've been sort of kind of slammed this last few days. And Ali and I haven't really sat down to really, you know, make a decision on that yet.
Right.
And so at some point we'll probably, you know, sit down like sometime this week, if not early next week or so. But I'm not exactly sure where that's at right now.
Just disappointing, right? I mean, this guy's such a talent. I was down in Florida. I was down at American Top Team, you know, a week or two before the fight. And, you know, he was supposed to be down there training. And American Top Team is a really tight group of guys, so nobody really wanted to throw him under the bus. But, you know, it was also very apparent that he hadn't been there in a while. And, you know, we know that Melvin's – I don't want to speculate, but we know Melvin's had his demons and his issues in the past. And I don't know about you, man. I hope he can shake him out because as far as the talent – and I mean, he's fun to watch in his fighting style. He's got a great, you know, spirit about him. You know, he's marketable, I think. And I don't know about you, but I hope whatever's going on, I hope he can get it right and continue his fighting career.
No, I agree. I think he has to understand that. First of all, understand that this is your profession, and just because you fought at the UFC. Doesn't mean that you're going to go and trash everybody else that's willing to give you a job. Because if that's what you're going to do, you're not going to last long in the sport.
Very true. Very true.
Unprofessionalism is just – it's just ridiculous how you can, act the way you act like that. Now, would you do that if UFC took you back? Absolutely not. Because they'll just – they'll kick him to the curb just like that.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it doesn't matter who you go to. Treat people with respect, and you're going to get respect.
That all goes back to your overriding goal, man.
Exactly. You know, respect is not given. It's earned. And so if you want to be respected, then make sure you show that respect to everybody else. And it's not just to me. Also to the people that, you know, book your flight or someone that's willing to hand you a towel or, whatever. Because no one's better than anybody else. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Don't think it's because you're a well-known fighter, you're better than the next guy. Because
yep.
That's not the case.
Yep.
You're not.
Very
you know?
True.
So, word of advice to them, soul search, find yourself and understand that you're not bigger than the sport and you're not bigger than any other organization. And you treat people like that, they're going to treat you exactly the same way.
Yep. Fair advice, man. You had some card shuffling. Obviously, the World Series of Fighting 21 is coming up in June, heading back to Canada. Yushin Okami was originally supposed to be on there, lost his opponent. Is Yushin still going to fight on that card, or do you think you're going to have to move him to another one?
We haven't finalized that decision yet.
Okay.
Ali and I, Ali's still trying to find somebody to fill that spot.
Still enough time right now.
Right,
you got.
Exactly. So, obviously if we can't, then we may have to move him to the next card. But we would like for him to fight on that card because he's been training and he's been in camp and, he's been doing getting his medical stuff for Canada and what have you. So, we were talking about the business earlier. These are one of those things, like back-to-back, like WSOF 19 and 20.
Right.
You know, we've had to literally, Ali calls, we go to have breakfast, I think about 10:30, 11 o'clock. We get back to the hotel. An hour later, he calls me and goes, brother, we got to get to the venue. I'm like, what's up? He says, Matt Hamill can't fight. He's ill. I'm like, oh. So jump in your suit and we're rushing to the venue. Then, Ali and I would just go back and forth. Thank God everything kind of fell in place. But we had to do the same in the last show. And but these are the things that, you hope it doesn't happen, but it happens.
Yeah, you got to deal with it.
Right.
You know, you talked about upcoming events. I noticed I was in the car on the way over here. I got an email from the Nevada State Athletic Commission. They announced they've got a meeting next week. You guys have applied for August 1st right here in Las Vegas, right? So is
correct.
That that's the plan?
Yes, that's correct.
I guess that would be World Series of Fighting 22?
22.
Would be at the Hard Rock. I'm assuming
actually, no, 23.
23?
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Good morning. Yeah,
that's right. And we're looking at main event for that will be Pajares, Jake Shields.
Oh, perfect.
So, yeah.
That's a Vegas.
That has to happen in Vegas.
That's right. That's right. And it's going back to Planet Hollywood?
Correct.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, a lot of great stuff has happened. I feel like this year has been kind of a year where things have turned a corner a little bit for the organization. I think there's been some very, nice positives for you. Still a lot of, a lot of events left in the year, a lot of things to do. But what do you think? At the end of 2015, when we look back on the whole year of what World Series of Fighting's accomplished, what's the goal? Where do you think we're going to – where do you think you're going to be at the end of this year?
That's a very good question. And for me, it's like, again, it's a matter of taking one step at a time. And that's always been the case. And obviously, we still have a lot more shows left in the year. So the goal is right now is to make sure that everything runs smoothly, make sure that we continue to keep our guys active, and continue to move forward. I think this year has been a challenged year for us, but I think it's only going to make us stronger. The goal is just to continue to do what we do and get better at it, and continue to correct the mistakes that I made and climb the ladder.
Awesome, man. Well, Ray, I appreciate you inviting me into your office, man.
Yes,
let me take a peek behind the scenes. Obviously, you want to plug the shows. They can follow you on Twitter. What else do you want to plug, or what message do you want to get out there to people?
Obviously, first of all, I want to thank all the fans, because from day one, we've had nothing but love and support from the fans, from the media. Listen, I do this because I love it. I'm very passionate about it. It's been my life, and so creating opportunities and giving fighters opportunities is a very fulfilling thing. You know what I mean? And so just continue to show love and respect for everybody else and continue to live life to the fullest.
Love it, man. Just follow the Ray Sefo Golden Rule, and I think you'll be happy. And, man, the fact that we might get to see you fight again once, maybe in twice this year, that's pretty exciting for me. So, Mr. Sefo, thank you very much for the time.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate it.
Well, that was Mr. Ray Sefo, who was kind enough to invite me into his office, a very well-decorated office with lots of sporting memorabilia there, and spent a little time with me this afternoon. So I must say I really appreciate that. And obviously, Ray is an open book and always happy to answer all your questions. And has just always struck me as a very honest guy, and we talked about it a little bit, but really has struck me as somebody that just kind of tells it like it is, and I appreciate that about him. He's always been good to me during his time as a coach, and certainly remains good to me as the World Series of Fighting president, so I appreciate that. And it really does seem like this has been a good year for them so far. They're definitely a struggle getting a promotion off the ground, but it seems like 2015 has been a good one, and it'll be interesting to see the rest of the year if they can kind of build on some of the momentum that that they've built up in the last couple of months. So, listen, with that said, before we get to our last guest, our last interview, again, if you like what you're hearing, please subscribe to it, the MMA Roadshow with John Morgan on iTunes. Leave me some feedback. Let me know what you think of the show. We'd really appreciate it. Rate it. Hopefully rate it high. That's what we need to hear. And if you're not an iTunes person, check it out on the MMAroadshow.com. And then, of course, follow us on the MMA Roadshow on Instagram. Never had an Instagram account, so I'm still learning all the proper procedures and techniques. But, hey, the least we can do is bring you some shots from the road. So shout out as well to my man Cole Coffey. Again, he's holding it down in New Jersey this week. And once we finish recording all this, he's going to be one that puts it together and ultimately gets it online. So he's the only man that understands how all the tech works. I just sit here and talk into a microphone. I got the easy side of the job. He's the one that's got to figure out all that stuff. So, listen, we're going to wrap it up today. Dominique Robinson invited us inside the Mayweather Boxing Club where we talked about his career. We also talked about lessons to be learned from Floyd Mayweather. Being around Floyd Mayweather, kind of a controversial figure in a lot of ways, but certainly somebody that has figured out the business of boxing, because he is an extremely wealthy man, and he's about to get even wealthier after his fight with Manny Pacquiao. So we talked about that. Also got Dominic Robinson's breakdown on Lyoto Machida versus Luke Rockhold this weekend. I can tell you Mr. Robinson is a huge fight fan, a huge student of the game. In addition to being a participant, he breaks down a lot of tape, watches a lot of fights, and you may have seen him every now and then doing a couple of videos for us as Greg Blackson, the coach. he'll be doing a couple of more of those for us in the future as well. Those are a little bit entertaining. So anyway, check that out, and I hope you enjoy it. And listen, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, the website, iTunes, whatever you want to do. Let me know what you like, what you don't like. We're figuring this thing out as we go, having fun doing it. And we'll let you turn it over to Dominique Robinson now. Stay tuned to the end if you can. If you're enjoying the interview, stay tuned to the very end. Don't cut it off just because you think there's a few seconds left, because the man ends the interview in fine fashion. So anyway, listen, my name is John Morgan. This is the MMA Roadshow, and really appreciate you listening. And listen to Dominique, and I'll talk to you again next week. So we are now inside the Mayweather Boxing Club here in Las Vegas. A lot of activity around us. You might hear a little bit in the background. Things are busy. Not as busy as they are when Mr. Mayweather is here, I'm sure.
No.
But still busy nonetheless. And I've got my man Dominique Robinson with me. We go way back, of course. We go way back. The Tachi Palace days. And you have made your way out to Las Vegas, man. And I know you've been chasing the dream for a long time. Talk about why you made the move here to Las Vegas.
California, you know, for a while it was the mecca of MMA, so it was a good place to be. The gyms, every gym you could go there was top-notch. Everybody was just, they were in the training about hard work. There were a ton of pro shows, and then I'm sure you can attest, the pro shows, they started dying off when they put the amateur there, and I think that's what ruined California, because it's not like the pro shows integrated amateurs into them. They just died off entirely, or they just changed from pro to amateur, and I feel like that ruined the whole scene, because it's clearly promoters trying to make money and not spend money. They don't pay the amateurs, and I think that's not right personally, but you can't knock the hustle. I don't really understand why guys do it, but to get back to your question, that killed it for me, because as the pro shows died, the gyms died as well, and a lot of people don't know that. A lot of pros started leaving California, and then it was guys like Nick, Nate, Jake Gill stayed, some of AKA stayed. Besides that, the other gyms, and of course Urias, started growing, but the other ones kind of died off besides Urias and AKA, and then Nick and them are impossible to find. Like, you call them, they call you back a week later. So it was getting harder and harder to link up with those guys, so I was stuck working with pretty much amateurs or guys that were brand new, and I would make the drive up to Urias, but it's so far from Oakland, man. It's so far. And even when I was at my house in the 209, it still like cuts 30 minutes off and leaves you with an hour drive, you know, hour 10 minutes, and it was bad. So I first got invited out to Vegas when I fought Dave Kaplan by Sean Tompkins. He was like, you have a lot of talent, come out here and everything. Then when I beat Gunderson, he was like, you have to come out here, I can make you a champion. I was like, no, I got to take care of my mom and grandma. I helped them because they're sick, and I wish I would have took him up on it now, because he passed away, you know, rest his soul. But I should have listened to him. I'd probably be further than I am now, because from what I hear in Vegas, back then when he invited me, Vegas was the hot spot. But coming out here now, and I find out that it's not really what you think it is. They call it the, you know, fight capital for boxing. It is. There are a ton of great boxing gyms here. The MMA gyms, it's like, from my personal experience, each one has one thing that they do great, and then the other facets are missing. It's not like Evolve MMA or K-Dojo or American Top Team, where it's like a complete system. And then the other thing is you pay, it's a ton of money you have to pay out here. It's like everybody cares about money, so I put together my own program recently. You know, I think it's going to work out for me. You know Joey Varner?
Sure.
Yeah, I've known him. He's like a brother since I was younger. And he was, like, talking about boxing, because he comes from a boxing background, too, how they center training around the fighter, you know. And MMA, you're just a guy in class. He was like, do it like boxing. Find the coaches that work for you. Vegas is a good place for that. They have great coaches. You know, it might cost you a little bit more, but find the coaches, put it together to a program where it's about you. So recently I've done that with Mayweather's. I have Otis Pimpleton Jr. James Toney's brother, and Dewey Cooper as my kickboxing coach, and Afres and Paishao as a personal, and Bendy Casimir as personal jiu-jitsu coaches. So I just put that together, and think it's going to work out for me.
Feeling good. Well, certainly, if there's a better boxing gym to go to, I don't know where it is. It's a little hot in here. You can definitely get your sweat on.
Yeah. I'll be making 55 like every other day in here, man. It's bad. This isn't even the hottest it is. Oh. When Floyd comes in, he wants the heaters on. And then it's the Vegas heat plus the heaters on. I'm like, what is wrong with this dude?
I'm just sitting here talking on a microphone. I got my sweat on.
Yeah, last time I walked in and said hi to somebody, and I was like 160. You know, like, it was that hot. I'm not shitting you. I made it to about right there where that T is at on the ring, and I was sweating, man. The heaters be blasting.
That's awesome.
And they always want you with shirts on, too.
Right.
Because you cannot wear a shirt, but they're old-fashioned. Like, oh, they're like, oh, the shirt will make you sweat more. I'm like, that's not necessarily true. You're burning up anyways, you know, but
well, tell crazy. Me, I mean, the fact that they're kind of accepting you here, and not just you, but other people as well. But, I mean, do you feel like we're kind of changing where it's no longer boxing versus MMA, that boxers and boxing gyms are kind of starting to accept MMA fighters?
Yes and no. When I first came here, everybody was like, who the hell is this guy? You know, like mad dogging me and this and that. And then I hit the mitts. Bah, 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 bah. They're like, okay, you know. And they could see I could punch, but I couldn't box like them. And I was like, I outwork these guys, though. I don't care how long they've been here. And, you know, I observe people here, and you have, like any gym, a crew that you're never going to outwork. You know, I'm never going to catch up to. They've been doing it longer, and they bust their ass. But then you have the slackers. And already my boxing is better than the slackers because I come in here with Otis, and, man, we put in work. I'm always like, more, more, more. He's like, dude, you know, I've already bought him like four pairs of mitts, literally. He has me, Linnell Bellows, KO, who's with a name like KO, he's obviously a power puncher. And he has Kevin Johnson, and we're like the three punchers of the gym. So he goes through the mitts. So it's now they all accept me and everything. And I wear my boxing shoes, my boxing cup headgear, you know, to show them that I'm learning the art. So now I get along with everybody. It's real good.
Nice. You've been chasing the dream for a long time, man. I know you want to get in the UFC. You've had your brushes with the UFC. You know, you tracked down Dana White. You took over a press conference, made it the time is chocolate. You know, what are those moments like for you, man, to be that close and to know that you're still waiting on that phone call?
It's frustrating because, you know me, I speak freely. And it's the only person standing in the way is Joe Silva, you know, because when I went and met up with Dana White, he told me that his phone, because I met up with him the next day, remember? He said his phone was blowing up about me. And he said UFC employees, just regular workers, they liked what I did at the conference and they wanted me in. And a lot of them looked me up after, would write me on social networks, add me on LinkedIn, write me, we hope you get in. Even at the conference, they were fans were wanting me in, and I got even more fans from that. Other fighters already in the UFC, you know, I know everybody because I started a long time ago. They want me in, and Dana said he wanted me in. So I told him straight up, give me up for Nescudero, you know. Let me take him off your hands, and let's get this going. And he said the problem was Joe Silva. And the guy said, I don't fight often enough. And he asked me why. I'm like, if it was up to me, I would fight six times a year. You know, I'm old school like boxers. They fight every month. I would want to fight six times a year. And you see, I don't get damaged in my fights, you know. So he was like, why don't you then? I'm like, the guys are ducking me. And they think it's a joke. I'm always, you see me on social network, always looking for fights. And I'm either not getting them because promoters know I'm honest, and a lot of them are shady. They all talk to each other. They're like, don't sign this guy because if you do something shady, he's going to call you on it. And I will. You know, like, these other fighters, we talk to each other. They're like, this happened to me. My manager did this. My sponsor did this. The promoter did this. Why are you telling me? You know, deal with them. And if
tell
you can't
the public,
deal with
tell
them,
the media.
Yeah, then tell the media so the media can put pressure on them. And they don't like that about me, so I get blackballed that way. Or I get fights, and then the people duck me. You know, like Escudero, he tweeted after the time is chocolate, I don't even know this guy. But he doesn't know. I save things, you know, because I know how people are. I save the tweets of when I tweeted him a million times and he sent me a smiley face back. So then I called his manager, who said he was down for the fight. It was up to Efrain. And then we called back and he said Efrain didn't want to do the fight, but he's going to sit there and pretend like, and they're signing all these guys. They signed Giagos. I called out. I didn't necessarily per se call him out, but he was he fought on the same card James fought Ricky Legere. And I told Jason House, who I feel is scumbag, I was like, hey, I'll fight any of your guys. And Giagos was there, so I pointed him out. Never happened. You know, Efrain, it's a lot of people that they have. And I'm like, dude, these guys are getting signed.
I mean, I think a lot of what stands in the way is your record, right? I mean, I'm sure that's been told you before. Obviously, that's kind of how we became friends was, you know, me kind of making a joke in Attachie Palace fights.
Yeah.
Because I got a chance to interview you beforehand. And, you know, you mentioned the fact that you have 10 fights that aren't on your Sherdog record. I brought it up during the commentary and made a little joke about maybe it's 10 street fights or something. And you being the honest guy you are, you saw it, you called me on it, and we kind of became buddies, you know, and bonded over that. But those 10 fights, man, where are they? When did they happen? Where did they happen? And why can't you get them on your record?
Here's the thing about those. And it's funny because people can put it together if they want to. It's like I started in 2003. It didn't get sanctioned till like mid-2006. Before that, Sherdog wasn't keeping as well track as they do now. And that's why you talk to guys like Josh Barnett, my boy, Luis Sapo Santos, Melvin Gallard, Miguel Torres, even Tito Ortiz. Everybody's missing fights on there, some more than me. Sapo's missing like, I think he said almost 30 fights. Josh Neer told me he's missing almost 50 when he comes up and trained with us at Knicks. So it's not just me. You know, and they're probably missing more important fights than me because I'm going to sit here and tell you, I was fighting Mexico. It's not like I was fighting anybody special,
right.
You know, but it was for experience. And the reason I did it is because at that time at AKA, a lot of the guys were fighting Mexico there. That's why if you look further back, John Fitch won that tournament down there, you know, and Bob, I didn't know it was a joke at the time. I took it serious. He was like, oh, you shouldn't fight. You won't finish anybody, and you wouldn't do good. And Bob knew that saying things like that, it makes me want to prove the opposite. I took it personally because I looked up to Bob, and I found out years later it was a joke, so I was all like mad all these years. But I was like, okay, fuck you, Bob. So I started going down there, getting my cousin, training with my boy Clint Cornell, who does MMA and boxing, and just going and fighting. So, you know, that's what I was doing, and it was Tijuana Fight Night. And then they became Cage of Fire. And Bobby Green, everybody was fighting. Me and Bobby Green fought some of the same people. The Salomão brothers, he fought one of them. I fought both of them. And that's why I fought Yure, who was way bigger than me because he was a student of theirs. And it was a lot of guys there. I almost fought Dominic Cruz in Total Combat. A lot
really?
Of people don't know that. And but it didn't happen. But I was doing that, and it ended up going under because they were involved in, like, mob activity. So all the people got arrested except for a guy named Marco Perez, and he's the only one that wasn't in it. So that's what happened. And then I gave my stuff, which I don't do. That's why I back everything up now, and I gave it to Jeff. Never put it on there or anything.
Wow.
And the thing is, Val Ignatoff, you know, one of my coaches that coached the Diaz brothers, he can – if you ever interview him, I don't know, he's somewhere up in California now, but I called Sherdog out at a show when James fought Ron Kessler. I was like, hey, people keep questioning this. I want you to admit it right now. And he admitted in front of all of them, you know, and after that, I let it go because, what you know, how are you going to dog a guy that admits it? But the record doesn't even matter now because you see guys 4-4 getting signed in the UFC. You see guys 1-1, 1-0 getting signed. So it's not even about the record anymore because you're from a different country. They do that. So they can't use that excuse. And then here's the other thing. If my record is what Sherdog has, why am I one of the best paid people not in the UFC? You know what I mean? I get almost 15 grand a fight. Why do I get that for my Sherdog? They would never give that for my Sherdog record. Why am I fighting Gunderson, who has 60-something fights, Joe Jaddy, Carlo Prater, all these guys have almost 60-some fights, if I have, like, 11, 12 fights? It's because these guys already know me. They know what's up. They want to give me the money and the opponent of my real record, but then pretend like it's not.
Right.
Because you know California, if the discrepancy is that large, they won't let you.
Yep.
So, obviously, they know, you know? So, and nobody can argue that. And I fought Carlo Prater. What was my Sherdog record at that time? Like 6-2 or something?
Right.
They would never let me do
never.
That. You know, so.
You know, it's I know how much you love the sport, and I know how much you dedicate your life to it. Have you come to accept the realization that maybe I won't ever get to the UFC, or do you refuse to believe that?
I refuse to believe that. If I ever accept that, I won't even be here. Like, this stuff is hard, man. I'm sparring pro boxers. You know, that's rough. That's not like sparring MMA fighters. Dewey Cooper as, like, pro kickboxers. You know, that's – I wouldn't put in all this – I sacrificed for my son. You know, I remember I was at one fight, and I got a call from his mom and got a video of him taking his first steps. And as well as I take care of him, it's like I never forgave myself till this day. You know, I can't even look at the video because I just feel like a piece of shit. And it's like I didn't do that for nothing. And the thing about it is people like Joe Silva and Victor Cooey and Mick Maynard and Ed Soares, these guys, Ali, they control people. It's not like a boss controlling a job. They control people's dreams. And it's like you have to be fair and handle things right. You're signing fucking superheroes, Phoenix Jones, but then this guy blocks me on Twitter from all the World Series stuff, and I've never had any negative interaction with him, you know? And he blocks me on everything, but it's funny because after the time is chocolate, he was the very first person blowing me up and blowing up my manager. If Dana doesn't sign you, put me. If Dana doesn't sign you, call. Dana doesn't sign you, call. If he could, and then after that, now I don't do it, and you want to block me from everything. It's bullshit, man. I've known Ed a long time. You know that. Y9 RFA. Have you seen some of those guys in RFA? I sleep those guys. Look at Legacy. I sleep those guys. Cess, I sleep those guys.
So let's throw it out there right now. I mean, are you a free agent? You can sign anywhere. Any organization that wants you can have your services.
Yeah. I prefer UFC. I feel I should be there. You know what I mean? Guys getting in 1-0 are like 10-0, you know, not to knock him because he's my boy Darren's boy. But it's like that Kane Carrizosa guy, he was like what, like 8-0 or something got in? But if you look at his eight people, you're like, who the fuck are they? You look at my people on Sherdog, you're like, oh, I know that guy, I know that guy, I know that guy. And then he gets there and he keeps losing. You know what I mean? And it's like, I could go fight eight bums right now, but eight bums won't fight me, you know? Like, so it's just, you know it's the truth. They won't fight, guys won't fight who they feel could beat them. Nobody knew who Kane was, so they're like, oh, I'll fight him. And then he was smoking people. That got my manager right there. Tree. You know, you see how evil she looked. That's why I got a reeking manager so she could curse these guys out, you know. But me and you, like you said, we've known each other a long time. So, you know, everything I'm saying, this is how the game works. And unfortunately, being a good fighter and being honest, it doesn't work out for me. But I'm going to get there. I'll go to 1FC, too. You know, I tell Victor, I'm like half my family Filipino, man. Let me in, man. We got hella family over there, so it's like, let me in. And he'll write me back about everything except for let me in. Everything else he writes back. He's like, how's your day? Cool. Oh, you see the Pacquiao documentary? And then I'm like, what about me getting in? And then he vanishes.
Silence.
Yeah, go on. It's bad.
That's funny. Well, we would be, even though this is an MMA show and we talk MMA, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention, since we are inside the Mayweather gym, Floyd Mayweather, a guy that catches a lot of grief sometimes. A lot of people don't like his persona, don't like his style. But I don't know if you had much interaction with him or his team or just seeing it like while you're here. But what's your take of Floyd as a fighter, as a person? And are there lessons that you've picked up while you've been here?
Yeah, I'm in here all the time. The gym is it's a semi-private gym. You know, most of the people here are invited. And then when he's here, it's like shut down, except if you're on TMT. And I've worked my way in here enough to where I'm there now. And he's a hard worker. It's no joke. And I remember I was in here talking about GSP. He's like, oh, aliens. And my mind, I have to quit the sport. I've been on top too long. It's rough. And you see Floyd, he's been on top. Like, what, 3, 4, 5 times the length of time GSP has, and people don't understand. They, that the mental, like, fortitude that takes. GSP doesn't seem like a mentally weak guy, and he broke down. That's what it is, and Floyd's been doing this longer. It hasn't broke. And when you watch him train, dude, I watched him spar a kid in here who is one of the most talented young boxers I've seen. I've been in a lot of gyms, and he over the rounds broke the kid down. And it shows you age is nothing but a number, you know, because they're all like, the old man to get tired. No, he broke the kid down through the rounds. You know, the kid started off young, you know. Oh, yeah, I'm doing this. And then you see him getting his ass whooped as time goes on. And he's a hard worker, man. I mean, one time I stayed in here. I got here at, I think, noon. And then I left at like 7 or 8 at night or something. And he's still here working, man. It's like sparring. Back to sparring, back to bag, and then the calisthenics and all this other stuff. And then he, like, disappears, grabs something to eat, straight to, like, a 12-mile run. And I'm like, okay, I'm not even doing that, you know. Yeah. And I know I'm a hard worker, and it's just – it's interesting to watch him. And then – and even psychologically, like, how he talks to people and the things he says, you know, like, most people are like, oh, he's talking shit, but – even the things he says to the people, if you listen to the verbiage, it's specific to each person. Like, he knows who he's sparring
right.
And what to say to him to work him up or bring him
That's
down.
That's hilarious.
It's interesting
That's
watching
awesome.
Him, you know?
I know you're a student of the game, too, man. I know you watch tape, man, break down fights religiously. This weekend, we got a big one. Lyoto Machida, Luke Rockhold.
Yeah.
A lot of people looking forward to this fight. To me, man, I keep going back and forth, to be honest, man. It's such a well-matched fight. I'm really excited for it. Let's get your take on that, man. How do you see this fight going?
You know what? That fight, I keep going back and forth, too. That fight is, man, because, of course, I feel Rockhold has the jiu-jitsu advantage, but Lyoto is like, besides Weidman, who's ever really taken him down and kept him down? Nobody. He has too good of angles and hips. So I think that's going to pretty much be negated. And it's going to come down to the striking. And I think Lyoto has the advantage there. People feel like Luke is this great striker. He's never looked that way to me. You know, just because his left body kick is taking people
right.
out in high kick. But that doesn't make you like this great striker. I think Lyoto has the advantage, but Rockhold's big, man. He's a big kid. If you were to force me to pick, I would pick Lyoto, you know? And I feel like Lyoto has the better chin, too.
Yeah.
You know, it's been tested. You know, like, Rockhold, the only time it was tested, he was out. Even though it was, like, some spinning shit, but, you know, but still – I feel like Lyoto probably would have survived that same shot because that guy could take a beating, man, you know. I'm excited about
that. It's
going to
be a great fight. I think we're all looking forward to it.
I'm excited about that,
man. I think we're all looking forward to it, man. Well, listen, I'm going to let you get your workout in. I appreciate you inviting me inside the Mayweather Boxing Club and the time here. I know people can follow you on Twitter. If they do, they better be ready for what they're going to get because you got plenty of action. But let people know, man. I think a lot of the MMA junkie people will know who you are, man. They've had a chance to meet you, you know, through your time on the show. But, you know, if there's a message that you want people to know, if there's something that they're hearing you for the first time, what do you want people to know about you, a guy that's not quite to UFC yet but wants to be there?
I want them to know, first of all, I'm the same. You know, from when I started fighting for $200 to when I'm fighting for what I fight now, and if I get to the UFC, I'll be the same. If I become UFC world champion, I'll be the same. I see these guys change. They don't have people handle their social media. They don't talk to fans. Or a lot of fighters only talk to fans when the media is around. It's a front. You know, they don't write people back. I want them to know that, you know, I grew up poor, so I really appreciate anybody even giving a shit about me. They can always talk to me. They can always write me. They can always hate on me. I always have something to say back, you know. Like, I even appreciate the haters and just all that love and that hate, I appreciate it. And that's why I play on the social media. I'm always looking for opinions, whether good or bad. You know, I take it into account, try to better myself. And I think I'm just want people, if I get anything out of this, I want people to realize that I want to be a sign of strength, not to give up, you know, because I've had, you know, man, so many times I could have quit. So many times I've thought about quitting. You know, she's talked me through some of them, and it's been rough, but I have to make it. That's the way I look. I sacrifice too much. Because if I quit, I feel like if there is some kids or somebody out there watching me, that's like, oh, I'm not going to quit too. And I quit, maybe they'll quit. That's just how my mind works. You never know, you know, because I get a lot of fan mail. People don't realize that, with a lot of good messages. And I just feel like I have to do it for them and all the people that sacrifice for me and for myself and for my son. So I just want people to know, keep it real, you know, and just like I do. And at FallenAngel510 on Twitter and Instagram. They better follow me, man. And you know I saw Lorenzo Fertitta. I got to throw that in there.
Yeah, what is that? You saw
him? I saw him. I saw him. I told him. I said, hey, you guys say you want people that can fight, that can talk, and that want to fight often. What's up? And then he brought up Joe Silva. He's like, oh, Joe. I'm like, nah, man. You know? You own it. Give me George. I want that dude, Ivan George. Just because I saw his name was Batman and Escudero. Why is Escudero coaching tough? This is the shit I'm talking about. This is exactly what I'm talking. It's because it's Latin America and he's Mexican. You see opportunities. They could have picked a better fighter. You know what I mean? Like, whatever. But that's, if you're going to do stuff like that, give people chances. You know, I told him, let me in. Let me take Ivan George. I'm the real Batman. That's my favorite superhero. He can't have that name. So, you know, I'm like Thomas Wayne, though, the dad. He'll kill a motherfucker. He won't put him in jail, you know. So, but I have a whole list of guys I want to fight. I take that guy first, and I'm sure to call out the next one. I don't feel I'm the best, and I've never asked for anything free. You know that. I just want a chance. And I've been the Tai Chi Palace champion since 2011. I'm undefeated.
Reigning. You know? Yep. Reigning and defending.
Undefeated. Hell of a year straight.
Word to the wise, if you're at the UFC, you probably should just hire this man because he's not going away. He's just going to keep bugging you. He's going to stalk you. He's going to show up in the bookstore, the grocery store,
yep,
the car wash.
Him.
You're going to find you.
You know how he puts the snow in the garage? He's going to see me sliding down with his kids and just with a sign up asking for a contract, you know? So – he better get it to me, man.